conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this. Violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon.
My horoscope is Aries, and I'm ready for war.
The only thing contagious about me is my bad attitude.
You guys, it's Andy's Girls. I was like wondering if I should do a Corona themed tagline, but then I realized, why rush? I have several months worth of content. I can spread out when recording. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 152, and I am so excited to be joined by none other than writer, producer, host of the podcast Pot Psychology, producer of the podcast B-List with friend of the show Pet Shop Boy, and close personal friend of Jamila Jamil, Casey Marcy. So glad to be satellite recording with you. So tell the listeners, and by listeners I mean most importantly me, where you are recording from right now.
I am in New Jersey. I'm at my parents'.
Oh, you're in New Jersey?
Yeah. I'm at my parents'.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Beach house. My parents live in Florida now. And they're snowbirds, so they come back. They just moved to Florida, and so they come back to the beach house, usually like April or May, or that was the plan. I don't know what's going to happen now.
So they're going to stay in Florida for a while.
Probably, yeah. But they were doing all these like renovations on the beach house. So like the beach house is sort of like half usable. Like one of the bathrooms and one of the bedrooms is totally off limits, and there's like random furniture everywhere.
Wait, off limits because they have like mommy and daddy time in there or something? Like, what's the why is it off limits?
Because it's, because like, it's being it, like mid construction, and they stopped for because of all this. So, yeah, they and then my mom tried to send like the interior decorator and a group of like painters over this week, and I was like, are you out of your mind? Like, my parents watch Fox News. They my mom wasn't really taking this all seriously until like yesterday.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, and I'm living with my ex-husband and our daughter, and it's really, really rough.
How it's is rough. That? Do you guys, how is that? Because there's nowhere to escape.
There's You're like, nowhere to
it's
escape.
It's not like you can like run out and like go, you know, it's not like he's like moved in temporarily, but like life is normal. It's like you are literally stuck inside.
Yeah, and it's been pouring rain here. I mean, when we first got here, no one was here because we've been here for a few weeks now. And so when we first got here, no one was here, and it was nice to go to the beach. I would take the dog to the beach. There was nobody, like completely empty because we're on an island. And now a bunch of people have fled New York and are here and have brought disease with them. And it's like kind of creepy to go outside because, like, you know, it's not nearly as crowded as Brooklyn, obviously, but there's still a lot more people. But yeah, it's been like pouring rain, so I can't even like escape for like my afternoon walk on the beach. So yeah, it's been rough. We got in a huge fight yesterday because he ate my veggie dogs, and then
did he know not to?
He should have wow. known. There was tons of other things, and then tons of other things he could have eaten. And then so we got in a huge fight, and then I went out in my car and sat in my car that was parked in the driveway and drank wine by myself.
Honestly, that sounds wonderful. It was soundproof.
I might record podcasts in there now.
I think that's super smart. I mean, I literally haven't gone outside in almost 3 weeks, and wow. I'm done now. Like, at first I was like, oh, this is fine, and I've been used to spending a lot of time indoors through like health stuff, but I've always had the option to go outside even if it made me more sick with like if it was hot weather and stuff, whatever, you know. But you like sometimes fucking chance it when you're dealing with chronic whatever for a while where you're like, I'm just done. But this, I'm like, okay, I literally can't go outside. It's just so wild. And then I hear from people, like listeners have reached out, and they're like, oh my god, how are you doing, New York, the epicenter, whatever. And it's like, there's not really a lot to say. I'm not reading a ton about it. I read about corona once or twice a day, and that feels like two times too many, because right now there's literally nothing I can do, and I'm stuck inside. So if you're talking to me about how fucking crazy the hospitals are right now, I mean, obviously that is incredibly distressing, but I'm not seeing any of that because I am in my apartment on the Upper East Side, like literally without I have a window, but it's like to the, you know, between the avenues. It's not like I'm looking at like a full block or something.
Yeah. Have you not gone out for just like a walk or anything?
No, because
you're right by the river. Can't you just like, is it empty, more empty there?
So my problem is that I'm immunocompromised, and I'm just very, very nervous of touching anything and being fucked. And I, like, the minute you go outside, you put yourself in danger or somebody else. So I know that there are other people that are going for daily walks and doing like social distancing plus a couple feet. And I just don't feel comfortable with that. Like, it just honestly makes me feel very unsafe. Like, the idea of it, because I would just be, knock on computer, I don't know how that would be, but I would just be crazy. So now I'm like, it's like, I thought I was watching a lot of TV before, but sweet Christ, like, God forbid my internet went down, that would be the actual pandemic. Because right now, it's like, I'm watching, no disrespect, but I'm suffering through Ozark.
Okay, I was going to start Dr. season Ozark. Three.
It's tough. That show, I have felt that through season one and season two. It's not, I don't know how to describe it. It's like sort of like a more depressing House of Cards, in that like moody, dark, energy that sometimes pays off and sometimes doesn't, but regardless, you feel dirty while you're watching. Yeah. Like, I'm doing that. I just finished, I'm on a Bravo thread, shout out to my fellow Bravoholics, and they had been pushing me to watch Tiger King, which I had been absolutely refusing.
Yeah, oh my God, it's so good.
It's so good. But I thought it was going to be like Duck Dynasty, which I've never seen. And I was like, I don't really feel in the mood right now to watch like GOP ducks like waddling, except they're tigers.
No.
And then I was 2 seconds in. I'm like, oh, my God, I DM'd them and said, I'm so sorry. I deeply apologize. I'm completely obsessed. It's like it started off like very funny, quirky. I can't believe this is happening. And then by the end, I was like, fuck, this is dark.
Yeah.
Like, everybody sucks in it. There's nobody to root for aside from that, like, one campaign manager.
Yeah, that guy sold ammo at Walmart and then became a campaign manager.
Obsessed with him.
It was, you know, that story was a podcast first. But
oh, was it? Because I never heard of it.
Yeah. Someone had been, I guess the guy who's been making this doc, he had been filming for years. But in the meantime, a podcast about it came out, I think, last summer. It was season two of Over My Dead Body. Over My Dead Body is like an anthology series about weird murder cases, typically taking place in Florida. And so I knew the basic story of all this. And then also that guy, Rick Kirkham, he's the like guy who is the he talks really weird. He talks really nasally. He was the one who basically opens the whole show. He's like, you know,
the journalist, Inside Edition or whatever. Yes. It was hard copy.
So Rick Kirkham had a doc, put out his own doc, not about this but about his own life, maybe in like 2006, and it's called TV Junkie. It is so good. Really? It's about his addiction issues. He was like, the whole time he was on Inside Edition, he was smoking crack and was like living this insane life, but also he had a total double life. Like, he was smoking crack, but he also had this like family with this woman in Texas, and they had two children. And he was just, and then he had like an apartment in New York where he was like smoking crack all the time, and he was like flying around, you know, the country doing all these like crazy stunts and everything. And he's just been like, and I think the reason why he speaks so nasally is because his nose is so messed up from snorting stuff. Because his nose, his voice wasn't that bad. Even when that doc came out, it wasn't as bad as it is now. Like, I was actually really shocked at like how much he's degraded. But I don't know if like where you can get TV Junkie. I highly recommend it though, because it's all footage that he's just been filming himself his whole life since he got his first camera when he was a teenager. And so there's like, he just has hours and hours and hours of footage. He filmed his fights with his wife. He filmed sex. He filmed doing like all these different drugs and smoking crack.
He filmed himself having sex?
Yeah, like with everybody, basically. Like, well, and so, and there's only like a little tiny like flash of that in a montage. But like the stuff with like him fighting with his wife is wild. It's a really, really, really good doc. I'm hoping it gets like more of a resurgence now that he's, you know, this character in this doc series.
Is he in recovery now, or is he still?
I mean, when that doc came out in 2006 or whenever it came out.
Okay.
Yeah, he said he'd been in recovery for a few years, but mm-hmm. I have a feeling that fell off because like mm-hmm. because that doc did really well. HBO bought it. I think it was at Sundance, and then HBO bought it. And so it did relatively well. And so he should have been poised for like a nice little comeback. And then that mm-hmm. just didn't happen. And he ended up in Oklahoma filming Joe Exotic and like being his like YouTube producer. So and then he had this like inside story of like all this shit going on, and he just never did anything with it. Like, these other people made a podcast and other people made a doc series, and he didn't do anything with this story. So I feel like his journalism is a little, you know, I have a feeling that he's still probably struggling with addiction stuff.
I mean, not to paint myself as a total stereotyper, but here I go. When the show opened with him or whatever, I thought that he was not going to be like a great guy at the end. Like, I thought that he was going to be more deeply involved with like nefarious acts or something, just because of the way he comported himself. But I was wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, that's probably just like the crack. That's just the crack showing. Crack jumping out.
Oh, no.
the crackhead jumping out of him. But no, he's like, I mean, he's not like big. He's not a big cat person. I didn't until this documentary series, I didn't realize was a whole genre of person. But it
Neither
is.
Neither did I.
They're all swingers. What is it about big cats that make people want to swing? Because they're all swingers.
No, they're like swinging in their own little jungle of their like studio apartment in Oklahoma or whatever. It's great.
Yeah.
And the fact that fucking Joe Exotic got two different men who say that they are straight to marry him in exchange for meth? I mean, it's young guys, 19-year-olds.
I just feel like
wild. It's so dirty.
I can't imagine. They're not straight. Like, maybe they are a little bit one way on the spectrum than the other way. But like, if you're fucking a guy, if you're a guy and you're fucking a guy for 11 years, then you're not straight.
I don't think that they would have had sex with him, regardless of how they think of themselves, like on the sexuality spectrum. I do not think that they would have ever considered sleeping with him, except for the fact that he had readily available access to their drugs of choice. And the fact that he just kind of kept them high and gave them things to keep them with him is bananas. Like BANANAS, like wild.
I mean, I don't know, because I feel like Rick Kirkham, and he was a like major addict. I don't think Rick Kirkham would have done it. I don't think Rick Kirkham would have slept with Joe Exotic for the drugs, and he was such a druggie. So I do think that it's like you've got to be at least a little bit queer to in order to do that.
But Rick Kirkham was also how old? These guys were 19 years old.
Yeah. But still, I don't know. Like, I think that they're a little bit queer. But
yeah, I can hear you.
Those weren't Joe's only husbands. They didn't like talk about how he actually had like two other husbands prior to those guys.
He did?
Yeah.
Were they also 19-year-olds? He seems for young guys.
I don't really know. But he, I mean. Yeah, I'm not sure. I went down a real like internet K-hole. Because, you know, when I listen to the podcast, what the podcast doesn't get across, what the doc series does beautifully is like actually show how friggin' insane all of it is and how like wild it all is. And like, I didn't realize that Joe was such a character. Like, you just kind of hear him talking, but nobody like described that he had this like droopy eyebrow ring that like hung down half his cheek.
It's like an earring at this
like,
point.
A mullet, a series of sequined blouses. Like,
he's rocking that fringe.
I mean, he's real visual. The podcast didn't really get that across. Like, they didn't really explain, you know, even just the idea that Carol Baskin only wears leopard print. She only like purchases clothes with leopard print on them. That's also like, I mean, every single person was a character.
Okay, two questions. One, do you think that Carol killed her husband?
Yes.
And two, which Housewives franchise do you think Carol Baskin could fit in best with? Like, which Housewife franchise should she join? And I'm thinking about this now for the first time as I say it out loud. I've got one.
I mean, OC.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's like they're, yeah, I think OC, she kind of reminds me of someone that, what was the name of that lady who was like a one season and done, and she wore wigs, and she had like a young lover?
Oh my God.
What is her name?
I want to say it was Dawn, but I know that was wrong.
Her name is like I feel like it's a man's name. It's like,
I mean, like Kenneth?
What? Is it like Evan? Like, I feel like her name, Morgan... Her name was like
oh my God.
Dale? No.
Oh, wasn't it? Wasn't there a D there?
I feel like there's D name.
Oh, I don't remember. But she reminds you of her how? Wait, I'm looking it up.
Just her temperament.
Quinn.
Fry. Okay.
She's got a Quinn, big Quinn energy to
you. Yes. Yeah. BQE.
I could see Quinn. I could see Carol Baskin on Jersey. I don't know why, but I could see her kind of fitting in.
I mean, she's, all the leopard print, for sure.
All the leopard print, absolutely. But like, she's normal, but also maybe has murdered. And I feel like I could see that working out really well with the Jersey cast, past or present. I'd love to see it. Carol, if you're listening and you have interest in going into another career or keeping your own and doing a reverse snowbird or whatever the fuck and going up to Jersey when they're filming, I feel like there's a spot waiting for you. We'd love to see it. Would love to see it.
I'm a little bit on the fence about whether or not she killed him, just because of like what that lawyer said. And that lawyer didn't seem like it was her lawyer, right? It was the guy's lawyer. It was the ex-husband or the dead husband's lawyer. I don't think
he was her lawyer because he was being a little too vocal about how some of this didn't fit together, but that it didn't necessarily mean that she murdered him.
Yeah, he said he knows how he died and that he won't say. So I don't know.
I mean, that guy's just angling for a season 2 contract. Who are we kidding? He probably works at Bravo.
But you know what? If Carol killed him, good for her.
God bless.
Yeah, because he was euthanizing the tigers and she really cared about them. That would have been her motive, you know?
Listen, so. She's a giver. What can I say? So how are you? I mean, do you find yourself watching more Bravo than normal? Less Bravo than normal?
Oh, less. God forbid, are you reading a book? Cable. So I know it's awful.
Are you catching up on the internet? BravoTV.com?
Yes. With my Spectrum login. But, you know, I have to do it the next day. I can't just like, because if I had cable down here, the cable doesn't turn on until April 1st because it's like seasonal for the beach.
Oh, my God.
So I know I'm not even really watching the news. I try to tune in every day for the White House press conferences because it just seems like such a circus. And I actually get a lot of, I feel comforted by Cuomo in these times. So his conferences and press conferences in Albany have been kind of comforting to me. If I had cable, I would just have Bravo on. I would have been marathoning old seasons of things. I would have just been, you know, parked in front of the TV.
I mean, I don't know what this says about me, but I sort of very rarely watch the TV itself. I am one of those people having Spectrum as well, as does essentially everybody in New York City. So I'll just watch like the Spectrum live. So I'll watch TV on my computer. And I am, for some reason, one of those odd ducks that doesn't typically watch Bravo new episodes when it airs. I actually like watching it the next morning. I don't know why that is. The only exception historically that I'll make is like the beginning of a new Housewives franchise, like the first couple eps, and pretty much every episode of New York.
Yeah. And what about reunions?
I mean, the last several reunions that we've been watching pre-corona and now, I've been watching the next day. Like Jersey, I watched the next day.
Jersey was like event TV for me. It was like like watching American Idol results. I was like watching it on TV until, you know, the third episode or whatever when I was living down here by then.
The third episode I could have watched the next morning or that night. I didn't watch for 2 days. I like wasn't in the mood for it, but I'm so glad I did. So let's jump in. I mean, have you seen, so let's talk through the checklist of upcoming Bravo. Have you seen the Potomac trailer?
I have not watched the trailer yet. I wish I should have watched it before we did this.
That's okay. Have you seen the Beverly Hills trailer?
I have. I watched the screener of the first episode.
Have you seen? Okay, we're gonna get to that in 1 second. Have you seen the New York? Have you seen the New York trailer?
Yes, and I watched the screener of that first episode too.
Okay, phenomenal. So, guys, if you want to hear me drunkenly going on about Potomac for 30 minutes, I recorded a Patreon episode on my birthday on Friday where I got sloshed on champagne and like watched Potomac and talked about it forever and ever. Amen. So if you want my like gut reaction to the Potomac trailer, you can join Patreon, support Andy Scrolls, and listen to that. So holy fucking shit. You've seen both New York and Beverly Hills Eps 1?
Yes.
So tell us your thoughts. Like, let's start with Beverly.
Beverly Hills for the past few years, I've been not into Beverly Hills. Like, I,
how could you be?
Yeah,
how
I just like, I'm so like annoyed with that dog drama. I've been over Erica Jane for like four seasons now. Mm. And I just, yeah, they're just like, it's the one that I'm like least excited about when it comes on. Mm-hmm. But this first episode, I actually like, I'm sucked back in. I'm drawn in. And apparently Sutton, that woman Sutton, they didn't have their taglines included on this one, on the screener.
Oh, okay, because it was like so early.
Yeah, but but apparently Sutton does not have a diamond, even though they announced that she was joining the cast, which is crazy. Right. But I actually really enjoyed her on the first episode. She's like a total stuck up bitch in the best way, and has like real, I don't know, her husband does some kind of hedge fund thing, so she has like real money. And so I actually really enjoyed her. And they sort of teased out, like, they're all getting along pretty much in the first episode, although you can tell that they are all committed to, they must have gotten a talking to or something by somebody, because they seem all committed to being authentic more than ever. And
authentic meaning what? Meaning authentically invested in creating drama to keep their jobs in place, or authentic as in showing that they haven't been in?
Showing parts of their lives that they hadn't really before. Like, you know, Dorit was very openly talking about the lawsuit.
Was she?
Yeah. Erica was not talking about the lawsuit. I mean, I don't know how much I'm supposed to get. I'm allowed to give away, but like.
No, give it all. Give it all.
Erica.
We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Erica, I don't believe Erica talked about the lawsuit, because like they have like several lawsuits. They have a lot of lawsuits. They owe a lot of money from the research that I did of like, you know, all these different loans Mr. Girardi had taken out. But Erica brought the women, because they all go to New York for Fashion Week. And so the first episode
Kyle's
is in
showing,
New York.
Right?
Yes.
She's
yeah.
Like new clothing, whatever, hobby.
Just based on the way that Kyle and Dorit were talking about each other in their interviews, and not based on anything that actually happened in the show, I'm curious if they end up getting in a really big fight at some point, because they didn't seem to have a lot of love for each other.
Well, that's good. Compliments
seemed backhanded. Yeah. And so, but Erica brought them to the strip club she used to work at in New Jersey, which I thought was fascinating. Like, I don't think she's ever discussed being a stripper before, has she?
I don't think I ever knew that she was a stripper. I thought she, like, grew up in Georgia and then whatever. The kid went to stay with the grandparents. She went to, like, to Hollywood to become famous. I don't think I knew that.
She lived in New York with the kid's father. Like, I think that's maybe where she met her son's father.
Oh,
and got
okay,
married.
Got it.
And was, like, trying to make it on, I don't know, Broadway or something. But she was stripping in Jersey and living in, I guess, reverse commuting. And she, but it was a place called, I think it was called Shakers, which I need to double check this, but I have a feeling it is the same go-go bar that Melissa Gorga was a bartender at.
No.
Because I just, I remember them saying like the name of the place, and it like back seasons and seasons ago of like where Melissa had bartended, and Shakers seems like that was maybe the name of it, but I don't know. I have to double check.
Can I ask you a money question? So there have been housewives who have been able to evade questions about financial or legal impropriety without necessarily losing their role on the show, because they've been able to be so cheeky. And I think about Karen Huger the most, where she was able to like bypass conversation, but because she was such a character, even the way in which she was flat out ignoring to talk about stuff still felt like something for us to discuss. You know, compare that with Beverly Hills, where these women just seemed completely uninterested in talking about anything legal, anything putting that kind of drama in the spotlight on the show itself. And I think about my major concern with Beverly Hills being that these women wouldn't bring up the financial shit to either like shame each other or to talk about it and have it be interesting drama unless they were fully in control of what was being said. So I'm listening to you talking about the fact that Dorit was open about, you know, the legal shenanigans that she and PK are involved with right now. And while I think it's good that she's at least discussing it, my concern is that she just gets to like write the narrative of whatever it is that she wants. And she's going to get a gold star for like talking about it at all. I mean, I think that there's a difference between someone talking about something in a confessional or in a very staged brunch with girlfriends where she's like, oh, my God, PK just came from court and these women know not to be shady or ask any questions. And I compare that with, you know, Lisa Rinna deciding she had a job to do and saying, like, were you doing coke in the bathroom?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like if a dinner party where a group of people are excusing each other can lead to that kind of drama when repeated on Housewives, why isn't that having the case with like stuff that is quite obviously dramatic and legal?
I mean, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like Dorit only mentions the Beverly Beach lawsuit, not like all the judgments against PK.
Oh, I could give a shit about Beverly Beach. I'm sorry. Apologies
because
to
because
suits.
They settled. So they settled and I think that, you know, so she's just mentioning that, you know, she settled this lawsuit and it's totally like she's owning the narrative. And these other the other women are not talking about it, which I think on Potomac, what makes it so great is that they all are all talking about, you know, Karen's money problems, because that's what would happen in an actual like social group is that everyone would be like whispering and like talking shit about this person's, you know, big problems that are like in the newspaper that they're not, you know, addressing.
And you would think the women whose show is based in Hollywood would understand the cinematic importance of at least having a little bit of drama that is like genuine water cooler conversation amongst the Bravo world, would understand the importance of a little bit of a sacrificial lamb. Like someone needs to be led to the slaughter, and the slaughter is
a
non-blog written on BravoTV.com. Well, that is the problem, is that they've now decided first one in, what is it, last one in, first one out?
Yeah.
Is that it appears by the trailer and by what I've seen online that everyone has just decided to like ruin her, kind of thing, where they're putting all of their energy in this one person. Does it?
Yeah, it does. Like, so in the like at the end of the episode, they sort of like they played like a super trailer of like what's to come on this season, and specifically it was actually like basically just about the fighting, because it was like, oh, we were all getting along so well, you would never know that, you know, what was that it was about to get so bad. And the stuff with Denise, like she looks like genuinely so upset about what's going on. Lisa Rinna looks positively evil,
like gleeful, right?
Yeah.
And thank fucking God, even if it's just the Denise stuff, I need to see a little bit of that energy. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it looks really interesting to me. I can't remember if Brandy was in any of this that like package.
Hmm.
She must have been. I don't know. I was cooking when I was watching it. But she didn't stand out if she was. So yeah, I actually was really like, I was like, oh shit, I'm excited for this season now. I think that this could be a really good season. I'm more excited for that than New York, actually, which is wild.
No.
Yeah. New York's always been my favorite of every season, every franchise.
So did you feel more excited about Beverly Hills versus New York before watching both of those premieres? Or is that the energy you're taking with after watching?
After. Yeah, after watching.
So juxtapose for me the differences between the energy on Beverly Hills, which we're talking about, where it's a little bit of like not a bottleneck, but there's something maybe bubbling underneath. We're seeing it with some passive aggressive confessional stuff with you're saying with Kyle and Dorit. And we all know that there is a huge explosion that happens. It's just a matter of when those episodes begin. So it seems like there could be more of a promise for Beverly Hills because we know there is one huge incident. Compare that to your experience watching New York, where these women are all inherently very energetic, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about New York is that, like, even the bad seasons are still good. So, and I know that they'll always have, like, a totally awesome vacation episode or series of episodes. They're the best on vacations. They're my favorite on vacations. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the one promising thing, which is going to sound horrible, but like, you know, Luann falls off the wagon and Leah McSweeney has been sober for 9 years and then starts drinking.
Wait a second. Say this again. She's been sober and she starts drinking like on camera?
Well, not on the first episode, she doesn't. But she,
oh my God,
she started drinking, I think, shortly before they started filming the show. And then she doesn't drink on camera, at least not in the first episode. But from what I hear, that she does drink as the season progresses. So they're all drinking. They're no one's on the wagon. Which, you know, that's how I like my housewives. And I'm sorry if that's like is insensitive or whatever for people that have substance abuse issues. But I do prefer them to not be pregnant. I prefer them to be, you know, able to have a cocktail or two. I think that's just, you know, when we get some of the best stuff.
Do you think that she went off the wagon specifically because she knew the show and cast she was signing up for and felt like she was, not that anyone said you need to have a cocktail, 100% do not think that happened, but do you think she felt implicitly like, I need to start drinking again so I can understand the energy that these women are feeling when they're like fucking with each other?
No, I don't think either of those things were related. I think that maybe it was just like a classic thing of like, oh, it's been so long, like I could probably handle it now kind of situation. And then tried it and then was like, oh, I can't handle it, and then stopped. And then so that's kind of where she is when the season starts.
Wow. Is something I had no idea about. That's wild. And then there's Lou, who like seemingly isn't just off the wagon. She's just pretending she never had a problem to begin with or something.
Well, like, she's not drinking in the first episode at least. So, but I know that she, just from reading page six and stuff, I know she falls off the wagon during the season.
Or she says that she never needed to be on the wagon to begin with, and that was just court ordered. There's a moment in the trailer when, you know, Ramona puts down a drink that you can't tell if it has alcohol or not. Lou, I think, goes to pick it up. Ramona says, you know, oh, wait, that has vodka in it. And Lou takes a little dramatic pause and then drinks it, which was the indicator that she was saying to the group, it's okay to drink. Now, in
because she's off probation.
Right. So she doesn't feel like she needs to, she doesn't feel like she needs to kind of like play the part of someone who's made peace with being an alcoholic. I mean, there is that odd scene of her going to tennis with Jill, which will continue to probably frustrate me when I rewatch it over again and again, where Jill says, like, you don't look like an alcoholic, which is just such a incorrect. A person doesn't look like an alcoholic either. You have a drinking problem or you don't, or you're like somewhere on the spectrum. So my only nervousness about this is, how is this going to be presented on camera and on TV? And are we to assume that because we all know Luann is now legally allowed to drink, that we should put away all of her conversations where she was seemingly open and honest about having a drinking problem? Or how are we as viewers supposed to watch her falling into a bush now? You know, is it just as funny as it was before, or is there darkness to it?
For me, it's gonna be funny. Because I feel for her, like, sometimes when you're going through something that's difficult, or, you know, there is such a thing as situational alcoholism. Like, for example, people in college are binge drinking and like drinking to the points that they probably don't ever do again once they're not in college, like getting messy and sloppy like that. And I think that maybe she had a few rough years. She probably had a really hard time after like the divorce with the Count, and then the Tom stuff was just a major, you know, mind fuck. And
completely
so
bananas.
I would feel bad, like, you know, all of those women must have felt bad for her that she wasn't able to like have a few drinks with them. And but like, sometimes you just need to like recalibrate. You need to like unplug and plug back in. And that's what she did. So like, I would feel like if I were in that situation, I mean, I truly don't think I'll ever be in the situation where I get arrested for assaulting a police officer. I'm pretty sure that's not going
to happen. Threatening to kill him.
To me. Yeah. But if I got, you know, arrested, or if I got a DUI or something, or which also won't happen. But yeah, I guess I don't know why I'm trying to relate to Luana. It's like she seems kind of a little unrelatable. But I would just feel like, you know, she had to do what she had to do to get out of trouble. She had to say what she had to say. And, you know, maybe she's able to, like, handle her liquor a little bit better. I don't see Luann as a Kim Richards type. Like, I see Kim as having a chronic, you know, problem with alcohol and substance abuse. Mm-hmm. Whereas Luann, I think, you know, maybe she just partied a little bit too hard. But I don't know. I mean, obviously I'm not a doctor. I'm not a substance abuse counselor. I have no idea. But that's just what it seems like to me.
I mean, for Kim, it seemed to be coming from a place of, like, hurt and pain and trying to treat that pain. And with Lou, it felt like a little bit of an extension of her own ego, that she just went too long unchecked and then was behaving in a way that was essentially, like, unsafe as a result of that. And so my thinking is, regardless of how she's, you know, how much alcohol she's drinking or whatever else, what other substances she was consuming, which I don't think just included alcohol, I wonder if she's been able to humble herself. Because I think that was actually what was needed.
I feel like absolutely not. I mean, I don't even know, but I'm just guessing. No.
Like the sobriety was a symptom or a solution to a greater disease. And if she doesn't do like some actual work on her ego and whatever the fuck else, she's just going to express it in another way. It might not be great amounts of alcohol consumption, but it could be talking about the cabaret for 9 to 15 hours a day when, you know, the show's only shooting for 12. Like, I don't know that that's, you know, it's like shooting that scene, even though this is probably unfair to her, but shooting that scene of where she's like standing staring at a poster of herself in Miami and then saying to Ramona that all of these women are jealous, which produced one of the great instinctive responses that Ramona's ever said, which was like essentially like, no, we're not, like, just immediately like, that's not it.
Oh no.
Like, that's not the problem. So, you know, you finished watching Beverly Hills and you were like, oh, this is interesting. You felt potentially intrigued by it. And New York, do you think that the absence of Bethany is really...
That's felt. It's really felt.
It's really felt. And do you think that's because she was such a strong housewife, because she was like the voice of the audience, or what?
No, I think it's because production, like, she quit on the first day of production and completely blindsided everyone. And so they didn't have, like, they weren't able to, like, properly cast.
Yeah.
Like, create like a good chemistry mix of people in her absence. Like, they didn't have any time to prepare. So, you know, it was like a lack of that. I still think that we're going to get a lot of good stuff out of those ladies. I think that maybe part of it is that the bar for me was so low with Beverly Hills. My expectations were so low that it was maybe a little bit easier to exceed them than with New York, because New York is like such a, I just love New York so much.
Well, I mean, I'm curious to see what happens. I rewatched all of the trailers before we started recording, and I found myself humored by New York in a way that I'd kind of forgotten in the last couple weeks. And, you know, the fact that Beverly Hills seems in any way promising is great. I mean, I remain mystified by their casting decisions or lack thereof as concerning this upcoming season, in the sense that Teddy is still full time. Erica Jane is still full time. I think Teddy could be part time at best, and Erica Jane should really be a friend of.
Talk about taking a boring housewife and making her more boring. The one time that Teddy was kind of interesting was when she got so drunk in France, and now she's pregnant and isn't drinking and is just, oh God.
And P.S., if you're going to join the show and part of your shtick is that you're John Mellencamp's daughter, and then you don't really prove yourself to be necessarily the best fit as a housewife, unless you're dealing with like mortal strife a la LVP, where I do think she served a temporary purpose. Like, why the fuck haven't we seen her father? I know he, like, lives in Idaho or whatever the fuck, and he's very busy not making music. But what? Why haven't we seen even a little bit of that? Like, I listen.
Is he still with Meg Ryan?
No, they broke up. They broke up, I want to say, in the last several months, which is, again, also really fucking frustrating because we could have seen Meg Ryan cameo on an episode of Real Housewives. And wouldn't that have been fucking magical? Like, wild to me.
I would love to see her on. She's had some interesting
pivots.
Yeah, she really has. Wait, but speaking of people living with their exes, Mario and Ramona are doing the same thing that I'm doing right now. And they seem to be getting along a lot better doing it. Well, she's like cleaning in a negligee and I'm like disgusting all day long, like not looking sexy. And
well, I'm glad you raised that because I asked the listeners to let me know what response to Corona they found most interesting that was made by a Bravo Leb. So I posed on IG, which Bravo Leb Corona moment is most on your mind, good, bad, or Danielle? And I got a variety of responses, including Siggy, I guess, saying something stupid and political, Ramona cleaning the toilets, Ramona and Dorinda. I mean, she's using everything wrong except for her mind. Dorinda's response to Ramona in the negligee, where I think we can hear the voice of John Medesian, if I'm not incorrect.
So they must be back together.
They must be back together. I wonder if that breakup was just for filming. Who's to say? Ramona half in tears 2 weeks ago telling us we need to stay at home. So true. Here's a moment. Did you see this whole thing with fucking Kelly Dodd? She went on social. She's been extremely, spoiler alert, combative with Instagram followers, perhaps unsurprisingly, and said at one point that she had been tested for COVID-19 and said it was because she knows the right people, and then expected that all of the followers would be like, wow, good for you. And instead people were like, what the fuck? How dare you sort of promote this or market it as like a great thing when there are very, very sick people? And she's just essentially responding to individual people saying, go fuck yourself, which is wild. I mean, I think it's because Rick works at Fox and something tells me that Fox got a nice little shipment. But regardless, she is like, Kelly is so complicated in the fact that I have come around since her first season to understanding that she's a great housewife. She knows her job. But she's such a garbage person, which I know because that's why I hated her for so long. But now it's like, am I supporting this person who's just saying terrible things because she's a nightmare? I don't know how to feel. I don't know.
I've always liked her. I always liked her from the beginning. She's Kelly. I'm not surprised that she got a test and I'm not surprised that she bragged about it. It's Kelly.
I mean, it's probably not the worst thing I've seen, which has to be. Did you see the paparazzi shots of Melissa Gorga?
No.
I'm going to text them to you right now if you have your phone nearby. So Melissa Gorga had the paparazzi show up to her house to stage some photos of her getting mail while wearing a mask. And someone tweeted exactly that. Guys, I'll put it on Instagram. And someone said, and y'all are mad because Jen Aiden called herself absorbed. It is insane. So Melissa Gorga, who initially was posting like real videos for Bravo TV, like, oh, here's a tour of my place. Look at Joe working out in the basement gym. And like, we're all doing great and self-quarantining. Had the fucking gall.
These are so staged. These are like Heidi and Spencer like level staged.
It's like Camila Cabello style walking and pretending to drink coffee the morning after fucking her fake boyfriend, except the coffee mugs are obviously empty. Like, this is...
She's taking the mask off. Like, what's the purpose of doing the whole mask on thing if you're going to take it off?
She takes the mask off to show like full face. P.S. Like, what the fuck? She's in like a little like sports bra, workout leggings. She is truly strutting for the camera like only J-Lo could. And it's fascinating to me because I want to know which editor of like the Daily Mail or whatever called up a photographer and was like, hey, Joe, are you safe with your family? And Joe's like, yeah, you know, I'm self-quarantining. Okay, cool. So I need you to drive to New Jersey or take a public bus or whatever to stage some photos of Melissa, which obviously puts yourself in danger from this pandemic. And then send me those pics. It's super important. For Melissa Gorga. Like, this isn't like a normal situation where, I don't know, there's some like crazy terrorist attack or something, but, you know, we all want to like hold strong. This is the second that you leave your apartment or your home or place of residence, you're putting yourself and other people at serious, serious risk for
this. I feel like Joe took these.
Oh, really? Oh, if Joe took them, I'm totally fine.
I feel like Joe took them and really submitted quickly. and submitted them to like a newswire agency or something. Like, they probably took pictures and sold them themselves. Okay, that's what I'm thinking.
Guys, if Joe took them, I have absolutely no issue with that.
I mean, it's still so self-absorbed, though.
It's fine. I love it. I love it for days. I love how quickly. And it's weird because the mask obviously is not an N95, which thank God it's not. Those need to be in hospitals.
No, it's a fashion mask. There's a weird mouth drawn on it.
There's like a vampire mouth. Oh, my God. I'm so glad, Tracy Morrissey. I never for a single second would have thought of Joe Gorga. Apologies to Joe and Melissa Gorga. I fully support your photography hobby and the 6 to 17 shekels that you just made posting stage paparazzi shots. Chef's kiss. I love it. The half glass of rosé. I'm finishing. Loves it as well. I have no issue.
I'm reading
with
the photo credits now.
Oh, no. Is it someone from Splash?
It was someone from Star Trek's photo, Sophie Fritz. So it was not Joe.
Okay, guys. So in this wave of emotion. Wow. So I have shat on them. Then I cleaned it all up. And now I am pooping again. My God. It's diabolical.
She's on their property, though. She's on their property.
But somebody had to travel to her unless a paparazzi lives across from her, which I highly doubt compared to how much money they
called them and made an appointment. Yeah, they called them and made an appointment. I guess, you know what? Maybe this person's just working in the gig economy and is freaking out by losing jobs.
But if you're not traveling for like a real serious need, and some might argue that this is a serious need, they wanted to see what workout attire Melissa was wearing and how she's doing and what fashion mask she bought where. I just don't think it's super necessary. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think that that is potentially the case. And for somebody who's, I'm just going to say this, father-in-law has dealt with extreme chronic health issues and who posted an Instagram video.
Yeah, what do you think Nono's doing during this?
I mean, I don't know. I hope they've stocked up on raw octopus and have hobbies and things for him to do. But he's really genuinely in physically delicate condition, regardless of corona. And so to stage these kinds of photos, which implies that someone had to travel, regardless of whether or not they did. And my thought is that they did for a reason that wasn't actually necessary. That is wild to me. Wild. Yeah.
Maybe this person lives in New Jersey.
I mean, it's possible. I don't know. I don't really care.
I'm fascinated by it, though.
Yeah. And I'm concerned that it's like, talk about inspiring bad behavior in other people. I'm nervous that like all of a sudden we're going to get like a 24 picture layout of, I don't know, Sonia doing God knows what where once people see this stuff, depending on what the reaction is. Did you see Kelly Killoran Ben Simone's Instagram caption to poor, sweet, corona ridden Andy Cohen, who... A shout out to Andy Cohen, I believe, is doing better. The whole scary thing with corona is that you can have terrible symptoms, feel like you're coming better, and then it like hits you like a tidal wave. So I'm very, very hopeful that he is just focusing on getting well and resting.
We haven't heard a lot from him.
Yeah, he's just been, he posted some responses to some people on IG that were like, how's Andy? And I think he's just doing exactly what he should be, which is quarantining. He said his nanny tested negative, and he just can't see his sweet, adorable, perfection angel son, baby Benjamin. And he's doing the right thing, and he's hopefully getting well. But Kelly, of course, took this opportunity, KKB, Kelly Killorn Ben Simone, to post a photo of herself and her daughter, Teddy, from back in the day when she was doing like green screen yada for Housewives. And she made a post that says, "Dear Andy," you know, "Bravo Andy, we may have our differences, but it's time to bury the hatchet. I heard you aren't feeling well, and I know how hard it is to raise children alone when you aren't feeling well. We are all thinking of you and wishing you a speedy recovery. Love, KKB."
Wow, so they've really been not speaking this whole time, huh?
I mean, unsurprisingly, I find it fascinating that she's saying, "I know how hard it is to raise children alone when you aren't feeling well." Kelly, if you're referencing your struggles during the filming of Scary Island, I would love to hear specifically more about that. But otherwise, if you're comparing God only knows what, falling off that plastic horse with being diagnosed with coronavirus, I mean, get her back on New York stat. I don't know. It seems so completely bass ackwards, for lack of a better term, bananas, batshit crazy, insane. And speaking of insane, there's one more. Actually, there's two more Housewives-related corona shenanigans that I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Yeah.
One, do you think that Lisa Vanderpump is, in fact, supporting her employees during this time? I don't have the answer, but she is not specifically saying on social media that she is giving a single dollar to any of the employees at any of her restaurants right now, just that they've shut down.
Oh, don't you think we would have heard if she weren't?
I think we would have heard if she was. I think she would have put on a big show about the fact that she was supporting her employees and, like, look at her good works, which she deserves, you know, positive responses if she's doing that. But I don't think that she has put even a swan's daily food and bev into supporting those employees, because I haven't seen it. And what we know of Lisa Vanderpump, she's very open about specific platforms and things and what she'll put across on social. It does not appear that we're hearing that. I know that the Toms put something on their Instagrams about them donating 100% of, like, Cameo sales to their employees. And this is me no shade. I think that's awesome. Like, good for them. And they're using their platform to raise money for people who really need financial support and, you know, their friends and employees. I think that's great. I just haven't seen that at all with Lisa. And because Lisa's in a much bigger tax bracket than the fucking Toms, I would expect that it wasn't going to be sales of a Cameo, but actual writing a check.
Well, I don't know. Like, I haven't really looked into it at all, but I do know that, like, if businesses are continuing to pay their employees, specifically, I think restaurants, part of the stimulus package is that they get loan forgiveness, or like zero interest loans or loan forgiveness for that. So like, it would, you know, she wouldn't really be losing out if they could continue to pay them. But I don't know. Like, you're so right. Like, she's like a really big into, like, letting everyone know what she's up to. So, like, the good things that she does.
I mean, isn't that wild that she hasn't? Oh, what's Peter posting? Peter is in Pump Rules Peter.
Peter Madrigal. Just because he actually works like there.
Yeah.
And I he probably gets a little bit of a paycheck from Vanderpump Rules, but he doesn't make the kind of money that everyone else is making.
I think he makes a couple bucks, but I don't think he's, like, rolling in it. I think he does still need to work there. I'm trying to remember when I went to See You Next Tuesday, if I saw him there. I remember seeing Guillermo, who is, like, the most beautiful man of all time, but I don't remember if I saw
Peter every single time I went to Sir. And I've been so many times, yes.
And he was, like, legit working, right?
Yes, yeah, totally working.
Do you think he's ever going to be full-time, or are they getting enough from him and he's just not interesting?
I think he's probably not interesting.
Wow. Well, yeah, I agree with you there. The other housewife-related in the time of corona announcement that I found fascinating was something that sort of friend of the show, Jules Aaron, spoke about on Heather McDonald's podcast. Yes. Which is the fact that, spoiler alert, Ali Shapiro was conceived by a sperm donor.
Yeah.
And that information only came to light because Ali's former stepmother emotionally blackmailed her and essentially was dropping hints that she was not her father's biological daughter, and then said she like made some announcement or threat to Jill that she needed Jill to tell Ali before this woman had her bat mitzvah for her son, because she wanted to bar mitzvah for her son, because she wanted her son to make sure her son knew before his bar mitzvah, so he's like 12 or 13, that his sister wasn't biologically related to him.
Wow.
What a stupid cunt. I am so horrified. Yeah. Tell me
those children that he had with his next wife that he was divorcing.
Yeah.
So those were wife. Those are his biological children. So they didn't have fertility issues.
How did that happen?
Yeah. Like, why did his sperm not work when he was with Jill?
Maybe his sperm and her egg just like couldn't have a dinner party. I don't know. Maybe it just didn't. I don't know how babies are born, but I'm assuming that like his stork just wasn't a good fit with hers.
That's weird.
But he has swimmers. Weird. Yeah. How did that work? Maybe something happened in the time in which science or whatever, in the time in which, you know, 26, 27 years ago when Ali was conceived versus how old these kids are, like in the 10 years since. Maybe
his sperm increased? That's weird.
Maybe he was using one of those like hormone things that Joe was when he had three swimmers instead of 15 million.
Steroids. That's what
I don't think that her dad was, not to start conversations, but I don't think her dad was like literally using steroids, but maybe it was situational, or maybe there was some. That is fascinating. I actually hadn't thought about that because I went to public school, but I wonder if.
I just sort of assumed that none of the kids were biologically his, and that's how the stepmother knew.
I mean, and Jill says this happened because this woman was a quote unquote drug alcoholic and has tried to make amends with Ali since. Ali says she's not ready to forgive her. And frankly, if I was Ali, I would say never talk to me again. I mean,
yes.
It is horrifying for a grown woman to try to harm her stepchild. And this is the whole thing with coming to terms with alcohol abuse or something else. Like, regardless of how you behave during those times, you still have to take responsibility for the aftermath of it. You know, like, this is horrific, horrifying behavior. And the weird plot twist to this was, so Ali, I guess, got in touch. So I guess Bobby, rest in peace, had registered Ali on something called donorssiblingregistry.com.
Yeah.
Found a bunch of siblings.
When did this all come out? When did Ali find out? Because it made it seem to, like, when I was first, like, reading about it, it seemed like it only happened last year. But if Bobby had set this up, then this had been years ago.
Yeah, I think it was while she was still in college, while she was a senior. So 21, 22, so like 6-ish years ago, while he was still alive. Okay. And so he registered her on this like website to find other people, find siblings. And then last year, she found a message through 23andMe from a different man. And it turned out the guy that she was told was her biological father from the sperm donation was actually somebody else. So the sperm clinic had mixed up the donors. So not only does she find out that she was conceived with a sperm donation, but that the guy that she was conceived with the sperm donation wasn't actually the right guy, and it was someone else who she's been in touch with. Jill says he is calm, listener, not in an education world or whatever. This whole thing is so fucking crazy. And I have to say, when I initially heard about it, I was angry that it came to light because it felt like a ploy for attention. And then the more I read about it, I was like, listen, if Ali is comfortable with this being made public, and even if this is in any way being meant to shame the stepmother, which I have zero issue with, she did something terribly and needs to be held accountable. It is, in fact, like a fascinating, not just tabloidy situation that I never would have thought about. And frankly, I'm upset we're not seeing it on TV. I mean, this is wild.
Lots of twists and turns.
Right. The fact that Jill's family was reaching out saying, like, this is the worst part of it. Like, Allie doesn't look like us. Like, why is she fat? Which is the weirdest, most toxic way to fat shame someone.
Horrible.
Right. By putting their DNA into question because that evil relative doesn't think that she looks like they do. I mean, that was, there's so many horrible people involved in this, and I don't think any of them are Jill or Jill's ex-husband or Allie or certainly Bobby, who was trying to help. It's just,
yeah,
I hope that her ex-husband really, really stuck up for Allie when his then wife was behaving reprehensibly, but who even knows? I mean, it sounds like their marriage was a fucking horror show.
It sounds like they have a good relationship.
Jill and Steven
have a good relationship. It seems like.
But I wonder,
the ex-husband,
But if you knew that your estranged wife was trying to genetic shame your daughter, you know what I'm saying? And like, he was still technically married to her at the time and ostensibly has children with her. I would never want to speak to this person ever again. Like, he's directly trying to harm. She's directly trying to harm his oldest child. I just think that's like fucking bananas. It's just so crazy to me.
It's so crazy.
But I'm glad that Allie, it's terrible, but I'm glad that Allie is, you know, figuring this out. And it's something that Jill referenced. She didn't even tell her parents. So she had to tell her parents after being emotionally blackmailed by the evil stepmother, because her parents didn't even know, because there was a lot of shame against this kind of science or whatever back in the day, 25, 26 years ago. And so she really had to have a conversation with her parents that she probably wouldn't have ordinarily, or certainly wouldn't have ordinarily. That's a very difficult kind of talk to have, because it seems like they were upset just in the sense that they hadn't been told. You know, that's tough. That's rough, tough stuff.
What? How old was Jill when she had Allie? I don't think she was in her 30s yet, right? I think she was probably still in her 20s.
Yeah, I think she was probably in her 20s.
That's
probably
really
right?
Early to
have this kind of stuff.
Yeah, to like not do other kinds of treatments first. Or, I mean, that seems like they jumped the gun a little bit. I'm curious about it. My feeling was that I think that her motivation was, in the middle of this divorce, maybe trying to accuse Jill of having had an affair, and that the daughter wasn't, this is just me reading between the lines of like why someone would do this, of Jill having an affair, and that's why Allie didn't look like the Steven, and like trying to like, because I don't think that woman was told that Allie was from a sperm donor, right? Like initially.
Okay, so here's the problem. So according to the Daily Dish on BravoTV.com, so they decided they were having issues conceiving, and so they decided to use a sperm donor. So, you know, IVF maybe wasn't a thing or whatever, or that was their choice. You have the exact right choice to use whatever the fuck works for your family. That's the whole thing with family planning. So when Steven, it says, according to the Daily Dish, when Steven and his second wife, with whom he had three boys, were getting divorced a few years ago, his wife, whom Jill claimed is a quote unquote drug alcoholic, allegedly emailed Jill to ask a quote unquote question of the day, asking, why is Allie, this is the stepmother, I thought it was a different relative, why is Allie the fattest in the Shapiro family? Why does Allie have blue eyes and no one else does? Why is she the shortest one? The alleged email, which Jill said was also sent to 15 other family members, this woman is a dumb twat, ratted her, as she claimed she knew what the woman was referring to, that years earlier when Steven and Jill were having trouble getting pregnant, they decided to use a sperm donor to conceive their daughter Allie. Jill said she received this email in April, but in August, Allie was snooping through Jill's email and found it. After confronting her mother about it, Jill sat her down, conferenced in Steven, and they told her the truth about her biological father. Says Allie, never in a million years would have thought that. I had no inkling, noting that she was shocked but was not mad at her parents. Rather, she was mad at her stepmom for all this pain she was trying to cause us. Jill says she blackmailed me, noted it wasn't for money, but emotional blackmail. She just wanted to tell Allie. I mean, this woman just wanted to create and cause harm to an innocent party, which was Ali Shapiro.
But it sounds like she didn't know that she was, that they had used a sperm donor. I feel like she was insinuating that Jill had had an affair and that Ali wasn't Steven's biological child and that it was through,
entirely
like,
possible,
an affair of Jill's, which is why she was like being so bitchy about it. Not that this is like excusing her. I'm just saying that like, that I think that she was, personally, I think that, like, I'm just trying to think of, like, motive of, like, why would someone do this? I feel like she probably was like, oh, if I can prove that this kid isn't his biological child, maybe then she won't be a financial responsibility. My kids will get more money, kind of thing, because the marriage was ending.
So here's another update. Jill shared that she never intended to tell Ali, as she was concerned about Ali's feelings and also didn't want to interrupt her education. Ali was a senior in college at this point. But prior to Ali finding the alleged email, Jill claimed the stepmom contacted her and told her if she didn't tell Ali the truth, she would, as she wanted her son to know that Ali wasn't his biological sister before his bar mitzvah. Wow, you're like using the calendar in the wrong way. Jill alleged she then hired an attorney who contacted the stepmom, and they worked out an agreement for Steven and Jill to tell Ali when she graduated from college. Wow.
That's so fucked up that the woman was like forcing them to tell Ali. That's so fucked up.
Just continuing on, 5 days after Ali found the email, her stepmom allegedly texted her to taunt her, asking her questions about why Ali didn't look like the rest of the Shapiro family. Although That's Jill disgusting. Felt vengeful, she said she ultimately decided to just focus on her daughter and her well-being. Jill and Ali say that after her stepmom got sober, she reached out to make amends, but Ali isn't ready to forgive her.
I just think,
what a horrible woman. Horrible,
that's really
horrible,
gross.
Awful woman. There's no excuse or explanation other than I'm a sick, awful monster of a human being.
I wonder what kind of drug alcoholic she is. Like, what's her drug of choice?
Probably, I don't know that she, I don't know. I just can't, I don't know. I just don't know. But, you know, not a Corona direct related news announcement, but certainly something that came out this week that I've been thinking about. And I just remain sad that we're not watching this play out on New York, because this is like crazy. I never would have thought about something like this happen. I don't think anything close to this has happened. Tell me everything. What are your thoughts?
I bet dollars to donuts Jill has used this to get back on the show.
And fucking good for her. Why shouldn't she?
Because it's not her story. It's Allie's.
You know what would be great if she timed this to come out right before the New York premiere, when people are like looking for any kind of New York content possible? God love her.
Yeah.
I miss her.
When is the New York premiere? Is it this week?
Yeah, it's Thursday.
Yeah.
In a couple days. I haven't seen it. You've seen it 6 times. Can't wait. Tracy Morrissey, I do want to talk to you about Jersey, but I think we're going to do that on the Patreon after show, which, guys, will be posted at the same time that this episode comes out. And P.S., I was just a guest on the B-List with friend of the show Pet Shop Boy, and that is a podcast you are producing. Can you tell us a little bit about the B-List and also Pot Psychology?
Yeah, the B-List is hosted by B, who is, you know, Pet Shop Boy from Instagram. If you guys don't follow him on Instagram, you should.
The best. He's so, so funny, and he's a Potomac diehard.
Is a... artiste when it comes to Instagram stories. He's just so good at it. Yeah, he does a weekly, like, it's like pop culture, I would say gay culture, podcast. I mean, it's
aka culture.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, gay guests, but it clearly, there's also, you know, women that come on the show. When I say gay, I meant like gay men, but I'm doing a terrible job of explaining it right now. I'm sorry.
It's an amazing he talks about Bravo stuff, non-Bravo stuff. He's talking about all things pop culture, and it's like the podcast extension of his very popular Instagram. So,
oh my god, you just did a great job. Thank you.
So you guys should listen to it, and not just because I've been on it twice. And Tracy, what's going on with Pot Psychology?
Pod Psychology is a podcast where my friend Rich and I just get high and we talk about stuff. It used to be a vlog, like, 13 years ago it started, and then we got a book deal from it, and then we stopped doing it for a long time, and then because I got pregnant and I had a baby, and now we're back. And yeah, in podcast form, and it's really fun. If you want an escape from this world right now, I would suggest listening to it. We've been lately, for our Patreon, we've been reviewing and recapping the Beethoven movies. And we're starting a book club.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited about that. We're going to do Zoom meetings with people about, like with, you know, listeners to discuss the books.
Oh, my God. I'm obsessed with that, and I'm going to need to sign up immediately. And speaking of all things Zoom, so I did a Zoom for my birthday on Friday. Spoiler alert, it was my birthday. I know we talked about that before, but just to remind you guys. And I had such a good time Zooming. Now we're Zooming now as we're recording, but I'm, like, new to Zoom and the fact that you can put in housewife backgrounds and all this shit. So I've had some listeners reach out and say, you know, I'm on Patreon. I'd love to figure out a way. I'm on the AG Patreon, and I want to figure out a way to, like, interact with you more. So I am actually planning to do an Andy's Girls Zoom where one night, you guys, in April, I'm thinking after an episode of a housewife show, so I guess I'm gonna have to watch that shit live, doing a Zoom. So I think if you guys haven't signed up for the Andy's Girls Patreon, you motherfucking should, because holy shit, it's going to be crazy. And I am almost done with the glass of rosé I started before we recorded, and I think there's going to be a little bit more when that happens. And who doesn't want an Andy's Girls Kiki, especially since we can't do one in New York anytime in the near future? But this is a way to get Andy's Girls all across America, and in fact the world, involved, and I'm so excited about it. Speaking of all things Patreon, if you do not already support the Andy's Girls Patreon, starts at $2 a month, and it's the number one best way to support Andy's Girls and get free exclusive bonus episodes like the one that Tracy and I are going to do. Tracy, we need to talk about all things Jamila Jamil, because the last time you came on Andy's Girls, it was when you had already started posting your JJ investigations, but right before it went, like, internationally global. And I want to know what is happening with all things JJ since. How is she self-quarantining and protecting herself? God forbid, you know, a symptom of corona is being stung by a bee. I mean, I think she would be in a whole lot of trouble. So I want to talk to you about that, and tell the folks how to follow you online.
I am Tracy Morrissey. Tracy is T-R-A-C-I-E on everything.
Love. And guys, Twitter at Sarah Galley, Instagram at Dame Galley. Tracy, you need to watch the Potomac trailer ASAP. And guys, if you want to hear my breakdown about all things Potomac on my birthday breakdown, it is on Patreon now, and I'm sure we'll get into it again next week. I love all of you. I know that this is a really difficult time, and we are doing our very best to bring you fresh, new Andy's Girls content week to week, not only on AG Central, but on the AG Patreon. And I just have to say, find happiness any way you can find it, you know, feel it, call your friends if you haven't already, check in on yourself and your own soul. I cannot talk. I literally have had a glass of rosé and I feel like I'm dying. And I hope you're hanging in there. We are going to get through this together by me screeching about Jill Zarin's evil ex-husband stepmom situation 1 hour at a time. Oh my God, did we even talk about Atlanta?
No, we didn't.
How on earth can you just tell me really quickly, Kenya versus Lanithia, where do you stand?
Team no one.
Really?
Yeah, team no one on that. Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay, we're going to get into it on the Patreon. Link to sign up, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. There'll also be a link in the show notes for this episode. Guys, hang in there. We love you, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.